if you want to, concerning times and seasons, you don't need to have anything written to you. You yourself know very well that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. Do you remember anyone else who said that? Jesus himself. So this is a phrase of Jesus as used, and it's come through the tradition. And Paul's picked it up from someone who knew Jesus in the community. He probably was writing something, and maybe Timothy said, oh no, I remember Mum, who was there when Jesus, you know, and he tells him about what Mum said, Mary, back in the other Mary, of the many Marys, saying, no, Mum told me that Jesus said it was a thief, and I thought, Paul, well, that's a great image. So Paul writes it down. Now, here you have to distinguish between they and you. It's hard when you read it flat, you mightn't think to do that, but accented. When they say there is peace and security, then sudden destruction will come upon them as labour pains come upon a pregnant woman, and there will be no escape. Another image used by Jesus about the day of the Lord. Luke chapter 17, verse 26 and the following. But you, when people say, okay, but you, beloved, you, the people of Thessalonica, of this little tiny Christian community that's being persecuted, you're not in darkness for that day to surprise you like a thief. You are all children of light and children of the day. We are not of the night or of darkness. So then, and here he puns on the word he's been using for death, falling asleep. Let us not fall asleep as others do. Let us keep awake and be sober. He's not particularly talking about having a few whiskies before you go to bed at night or anything. He doesn't mean sober like that, so stop blushing, all of you. No, he's talking about being... Sobriety means balance, doesn't it? It means living a harmonious life, not excessive in any way. For those who sleep, sleep at night, and those who are drunk, get drunk at night. But since we belong to the day, let us be sober, and let us now put on, and he goes through the three virtues which we've looked at often in Paul coming together, and they still do. Let us put on the breastplate, and he's talking about the ordinary armour used in those days in the army, the breastplate of faith and love, and a helmet of the hope of salvation. So let's be armed, ready for the battle that we're doing with the world and with sin, and there's his image taken typically from the day, but the point I want you to notice is faith, hope and love, which we studied together when we looked at Galatians, and we've already seen them in the first verses of this letter, where he admired them for their faith and their hope and their love. For God has not destined us for wrath. We studied that 2 weeks ago, eh? Chapter 1, verse 10. Wrath meaning the condition a person finds him or herself in when they've blocked God off. What happens in a room when you darken the room, pull the blinds. The sun is still brightly shining. God never stops loving. God loves from all eternity. And if I, please God, I won't, but if I ended up in hell, God would love me for all eternity. It's just that I refuse to receive it. That's what hell is. So, God hasn't destined us for this, but to obtain salvation, full healing life, through our Lord Jesus Christ. And here beautifully he says, who died for us, gave his life for us, so that whether we are awake, living, or asleep, physically dead, you know, whether we're awake or asleep, we may live with him. That's the key again. Beautiful, really. Very simple. What the important thing is to live with Christ. And we can live with Christ here, and we can live with Christ beyond death. Therefore, encourage one another and build up each other as indeed you are doing. So he has now covered the 2 points that he was concerned about in the letter. Persecution, we've looked at, suffering and so on. And then now, the problem they had. He's telling them to be peaceful, keep hoping, keep loving, stay awake, be with Christ, And don't be afraid that death will put an end to that, because it won't. It's not really death, it's falling asleep. And now, in verse 12, he moves on to a few little practical things before the letter comes to its completion. We appeal to you, brothers. Brothers and sisters, to respect those who labour among you and have charge of you in the Lord and admonish you. Esteem them very highly in love because of their work. So this is the first time we've had a look at organisational leadership in the community. Every community needs it. We're an organism. And an organism needs unification, it needs organising. So a community will need all kinds of gifts. The main gift, Paul will keep telling us, and in the next letter he'll tell us so beautifully, is love. And there's all kinds of ways of leadership, particularly leadership in love. But there's leadership in healing, leadership as a prophet, leadership in prayer, leadership in millions of ways. But one of the ways of leadership is organisational leadership. Clearly, every community knows that. So the church needs it, just like the synagogue. Well, there are those who have this job. But this is what I suggest to you. At this time, we're only a few months away from where Paul first went to Thessalonica. Surely you can imagine they're looking to Paul for leadership. I mean, he's gone to there. He was the leading missionary there. They're either writing to him or sending messages to him. And so they kept looking to him for leadership at this stage of the church. So the kind of leaders that he set up in Thessalonica were not independent of Paul any more than Paul was independent of Jerusalem. So that's the first thing. Second thing, all leadership is in the Lord. Those who are in charge of you in the Lord. That's already telling us about something about leadership. If leadership is not in the Lord, organisation leadership, for us now, and for many, well, I suppose forever in a way, the name we've given to those who have organisational leadership is priest or bishop. Those two words are our long, long, long tradition. So, but if a priest, let's say, exercises leadership but not in the Lord, then that's very dangerous stuff. That's power. That's something else. It has to be in the Lord. It has to be in love and in grace. And so he's presuming that. Now, there are two kinds of leadership we find in the very earliest church. One are the presbyters. And that seems to be the form of leadership that happened in the Jewish Christian communities. For very obvious reasons, because the presbyters was the way the Jewish synagogue was organised. So people don't usually think up a whole new system, they just carry the system over. It's presbyter meaning the older men who were the natural leaders or whatever in the community. They're the presbyters. The Acts of the Apostles, you find them mentioned there, and James was the leading presbyter in the Council of Jerusalem. But also Paul talks about in a letter to the Philippians, who was the first community he visited in Europe just before he went to Thessalonica. We saw that a couple of weeks ago. There he talks about people who are bishops. Well, the word is episkopos, and the P becomes a B, biskopos, bishop. It's the same word. As priest is the same word as presbyter. If you just drop the P-R-E-S-T, you put an I in there, the language has shifted a bit, but that's where the word comes from. Likewise, bishop comes from the word episkopos, and it means episkopos, periscope, telescope, you know. Scope means see, and epi means over. So episkopeo means to have oversight, to oversee, to check that everything's going according to the gospel, to check that all the gifts, and that's what the priest's job is, to check that all the lovely gifts of the Spirit are in harmony, and that someone isn't like an orchestra, someone isn't, you know, they have great fun with the tuba, but you can't hear the violins because they're making too much noise. Somebody has to go like that to the tuba to just shh and bring up the violins, because, you know, or sometimes put the violins down and bring up the triangle or something. So it's an orchestration of things. So there's another word, the bishops. And that seems to be, I mean, it seems to be a word that Paul chose to use in the non-Jewish Christian communities, because they didn't have presbyters. That wasn't their system. They had no system, really. They had to create a system. And the word sounds very likely, doesn't it? The word they used for the person who was in organizational charge of the community in these Greek Gentile Christian communities was the overseer. Simple term. And then later you get the bishops and priests, bishops and priests, presbyters, and then finally you have, by the end of the first century even, you have a system working out where you've got a number of priests, and then you have an overseer who keeps his eye on what the priests are doing, and you get the system we've got of a bishop with a lot of priests. Okay. That's right. Well, yes, he would have. You can find that in the Acts of the Apostles. It mentions that, Teresa, where Paul, when he was journeying through southern Galatia, on his way back, it says, I may not be able to quickly find the text, but let me just have a... I've got it anyhow. Acts 14:23 reads, after they had, that's Paul and Barnabas, after they had appointed elders, presbyters, priests, for them in each church with prayer and fasting, they entrusted them to the Lord in whom they had come to believe. So Paul would have, but he probably would have said to the community, you know, he would have seen who the leaders were. And they would have said, oh, you know, Bill's terrific. You know, he's lovely and he's got a great family and he's kind to everybody. And he says, oh, no, I don't want to. Oh, yeah, you do it. So Bill did it. Didn't spend 7 years in the seminary first. He just was the leader, so he led, I guess, the simple way it was. And so the purpose of the leaders, this little verse has told us too, is to admonish. It's just not bad to see the admonish is the word, but the Greek is nousetheo, N-O-U-S, you know the English word nous, that's the nearest we've got to it. Nous means the mind. So noetic, there's a lot of words in English, but they're rather strange Greek words in English. So nousetheo, tithemi, means to place. To admonish means to get people's head in the right place. That's what it means literally. To get people thinking correctly. It's not a bad thing, is it? To get our thoughts, because the wrong thoughts can produce dysfunctional feelings, as we all know, and dysfunctional feelings can disrupt anybody's personal or communal life. So the task of the priest was to say, no, you haven't got it quite right. That's not what Jesus meant or whatever. You teach, but correct people's thinking so that they can think in a more healthy, truthful way.